Technorama episode 644, Escape Key Minor. Hey, hello, and welcome to Technorama. If this is your first time joining us, you found us. Good job. Give yourself a pat on the back and a raise from Petty Cash. My name is Chuck Tomasi, and this is the podcast that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. Whether you're watching or listening, we are happy that you are here. If you are new or returning, we are doubly happy that you are here. It is Father's Day here in the United States as we record this. So happy Father's Day, Craig.
Oh, yeah. Happy Father's Day, Chuck.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Good, good, good. We're going to go a little deeper into our Father's Day details on the Patreon show.
That's right. So Father's Day for me was 19 years in the making. Well, maybe 20, technically.
I told my oldest daughter, I blame you for this.
Yeah. It's like Mother's Day. I tell my mom, if it wasn't for you, none of this would be possible.
No, if it wasn't for me.
Right. If it wasn't for me, none of this would be possible for you, Mom.
If I weren't your child, you wouldn't be a mother, so... Be selling it, right. Celebrating an awful lonely day. All right, let's get into the feedback. Pull up those questions and the shares. It's not worth crying over, Craig.
I know, right?
But our feedback isn't that good.
Unfortunately.
Those letters. I love those letters.
They shares.
Find out what you've got to say.
You didn't get any responses to your share.
Whatever. I will.
All right. You can have the Technorama one. I'll take the two from my comments.
All right.
Our question of the week this last week was, what is a famous movie that you cannot understand the appeal of? Aside from the grammar in that sentence, we'll move on. And what did you get on the Technorama page, Craig?
Well, let's start with good old buddy Gary Lindros. He says, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. He says, I can't fathom its appeal.
It's a cheesy horror movie. What's not to get?
I was not a big fan. I mean, not that I didn't go into my way to see a bunch of old horror movies.
Yeah.
Until my good old friend Mike Boss, his family had a video store. And then Mike's like, Hey, let's watch this.
Breaks up the boredom.
Every movie. Huh?
It breaks up the boredom.
It did. And we watched about every one of those movies. So, yeah, it's all right. Tim Callender says, Buckaroo Banzai. It has occasional flashes, but it thinks it's more clever than it actually is. But it also suffers from its low budget approach, which I think adds to its appeal.
That's another one of those, cheesy cult movies.
Actually, I think that is the premise. It thinks it's more clever than it actually is. That's the whole point. That's what I got.
It's one of those movies like Holy Grail, or Napoleon Dynamite. You have to learn to appreciate it, because if you just hear people ranting about how funny it is or whatever, you're going to go in with high expectations, and it's not that kind of movie.
Yeah, it's a little different. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I think all the characters thought they were more clever than they actually were.
Right.
Yeah. That's the point. See, Tim, you actually get it.
Without getting it.
Yeah. You got it without getting it.
Weber Baker says, Dazed and Confused. And I have to admit, I have not watched that movie, so I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Let's see. And John Kratzer says, Steel Magnolias.
I get that one.
I've never watched it.
You've never watched Steel Magnolias? And you say you're from the South.
Well, we only have regular magnolias around here. There's no steel ones.
Well, if you rip them off someone else's tree, then you stole them.
Oh, okay. Good point. Good point. I don't know. I know. I never watched it.
Try the veal. I'm here till...
I might have to go dig it up just so I can watch it and make you happy.
it's like Beaches. It's one of those epitome chick flicks.
Okay. Yeah, I understand. Well, I know what it is. I just never watched that. And that's why I never watched it. So
get your box of Kleenex and your wife and you'll be good.
All right.
Eric Miller says Brokeback Mountain. I haven't watched that one either. So I know one, but
I did, and I thought it was, I kind of seem to remember it's kind of all over the place a little bit. So
everybody just talks about the scene, but it's like, what else is there to that movie? I don't know.
Well, that's the whole point. That's what I was, yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at, was it seems like it's all over the place. You know, they have relationship issues with other people and then themselves, and, you know, so.
Okay.
So John Mueller Jr. says, you've got mail. Come on, John, you get that. You get an email.
And yeah.
You send one. You know, you get it. Right? Come on.
Not the movie.
Oh. Our buddy Steve London says, lost in translation.
Well, that's because he's from Sweden.
I was going to
say that. You see the little button on the bottom of his transcript that says translation?
Yeah, I know. I know. Let's see. He says, as a series, I would say The Mandalorian, it was okay, but I didn't get the hype around it. I know it is like cursing in a church, but I don't get it.
Cursing in a church?
I don't know.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Well, I enjoy it. I enjoyed The Mandalorian, The Mandalorian. But I don't know. I guess I see your point. I don't know.
Brad Miller says, Inception. Cool idea, but it seemed like a weak concept to showcase over the top special effects. Like they were sitting on the effects and looking for a way to show it. I kind of get that, but there was something to that thing about, you know, when you're dreaming and you know you're dreaming, or you mm-hmm. have a dream within a dream.
Yeah,
that was kind of where it was going. They were playing on that idea and how mm-hmm. deep you could go and getting lost in that depth and not really knowing which one is the true reality. So you need a totem.
Yeah. What's your totem?
The screaming tribble? I don't know. If the tribble coos, I'm in reality. If the tribble screams, I'm still lost in the dream world.
Yeah, right now my totem is this. It's this little Kirk thing with the.
Okay, what does he do if you're still in the dream world?
Focus. What does he do?
Yeah. What's the difference of being in the dream world?
He hits on women.
That's the real world.
Oh, I agree. That's right. Yeah. Oh, God.
Like I said, what's the difference?
Yeah.
All right, that's it for this week. We will give you another question of the week at the end of the show. So stick with us. We'll also post that on social media for you. You enjoyed a vegetable slicer, Craig?
I don't know what that...
I don't know what that comment... Thanks,
I don't understand it.
Okay. Context, please.
What movie didn't you get? I don't get John Mueller Jr. sometimes. I'm just kidding.
What did I say last week? It was also on my comment that I shared. Now I don't remember what it was. It was
movie.
Yeah.
I
put it. It was like the opener when I shared because I remembered it this afternoon, but I did not remember it. I don't remember it now. Let me see. Two shares.
Birdman.
Birdman. That's what it was. Birdman. I don't get Birdman. Yeah.
So. I still stick with Starship Troopers.
You don't get it. It's another cheesy, campy sci-fi fun movie with lots of shoot 'em up and bugs.
The only little news reel clips I thought were interesting. I don't know. Aliens were throwing rocks at Earth. What for?
Because they can.
See, that's what I didn't get. Maybe I should go back and revisit it because I've only seen it once.
Why did the Vogons blast Earth so the new hyperspace bypass could go through?
Because bypasses have to be built.
Right.
Right? Come on.
Too bad you just can't lay down in front of that construction equipment.
Right. Bypasses have to be built.
Let's do the history thing. We're deep into the hitchhikers now.
That's right.
On this day in history for June 23rd, 2021, this is the 174th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 191 days remaining in 2021. It was on this date in 1810 that John Jacob Astor, that was always one of the fun things you said as a kid.
Jacob Schmidt.
You mash his second and third name together, Astor.
Oh.
I didn't say anything bad, Mom. I said John Jacob Astor.
Yeah,
he formed the Pacific Fur Company.
Wonder what he was peddling.
Furries.
Yeah.
I am a giant beaver. Look at me.
Yeah. It was also on this date in 1860 that the United States Congress established the Government Printing Office, GPO.
Nobody calls it that anymore. On June 23rd, 1868, Christopher Latham Sholes received a patent for an invention he called the typewriter.
Type dash writer.
It will never go anywhere. Yeah, lose the dash. Kind of what they told us with ServiceNow. I can't afford the domain. It's already been purchased.
Yeah.
Typewriter is one word. You know, that's also the, you can type that whole word right on the top line of your keyboard.
Typewriter?
Yes.
I guess you can. Yeah.
Well, the top, not the numbers of the function keys. You move down a little bit, kids.
Not if you use Dvorak.
Nobody uses Dvorak.
All right. Also on today, in 1894, the International Olympic Committee was founded at the Sorbonne in Paris. Sorbonne in Paris.
Good luck with the rest.
At the initiative of Baron Pierre de Coubertin.
Close enough. So, with the Olympics right upon us, it's good to remember that 95 years ago, the IOC started. No, 1894. Sorry, I looked down to the next line. Same date in 1926. The College Board administered the first dreaded SAT exam.
Yeah.
Up until then, kids just go, yeah, cool, I'm there.
That's exactly the way they talked back in 1926. Also, on June 23rd, 1931, Wiley Post and Harold Gaddy took off from Roosevelt Field, Long Island, in an attempt to circumnavigate the world in a single-engine plane.
Where are they now, Wiley Post and Harold Gaddy? An attempt. I like how they said that. How far did they get? June 23rd, 1960, the United States Food and Drug Administration declared Enovid to be the first officially approved combined oral contraceptive pill in the world.
Enovid? Was before COVID? Actually, should be after it is E. It was on this date in 1969 that IBM announced that effective January 1970, it will price its software and services separately from hardware, thus creating the modern software industry.
Wow. The Amy Bowen says, for some reason, I'm hearing the sound at 1.5 speed. I'm just talking really fast tonight. It's on the live video. I don't know if it's my tablet, my internet connection, Facebook, Stream Deck, or Zoom that's doing it. No big deal. I can understand you fine. Well, you'll get done 50% faster than everyone else.
Somebody can understand you fine.
Nobody can understand this show. Even Dr. Michio Kaku. That same date in 1994, NASA's Space Station Processing Facility, a new state-of-the-art manufacturer building for the ISS, officially opened at Kennedy Space Center.
Yeah. And happy birthday goes out on this date to English mathematician and computer scientist Alan Turing, born on this date in 1912.
Did anyone ever give him the Turing test? I don't believe he's real.
Well, he gave it to himself.
Also turning 101 today is Kuwaiti astronomer Saleh Ajiri.
And born June 23rd, 1922, American lieutenant and physicist Morris R. Jepson.
Don F. Iseal, the American colonel pilot and astronaut, was born the same date in 1930.
And Baron Rees of Luddow, English cosmologist and astrophysicist, Martin Rees. Okay, I've got a bunch of Rees in there. Born on this date in 1942.
Don't get your cosmetology mixed up with cosmology.
He's an astrophysicist, and he does hair pretty good.
Pretty good. I'm going to make you a homunculus. Okay. Sorry, that was really deep for you. Also turning 68 today is Armenian physicist, politician. I like this. He's a physicist, then politician, and current president of Armenia, Armin Sarkissian.
That's pretty awesome. An American director, producer, and screenwriter, Joss Whedon, is 57 today.
All hail the Joss.
I thought he was blackballed.
No, That was Firefly. Listener birthdays this week include June 25th, Mark Shepard from Kansas. Jim Gookin from Philadelphia, PA is also on the 25th. 26th has a couple of birthdays. Patrick Norton, I'm sure he still listens to the show. Daughter of Will, the computer guy, is also on the 26th. 27th is Jordan Burkhead, daughter of Chip Burkhead from the Scotch Cast. And Martin McKay is 40, at some point.
He's on the 29th. Anymore.
That's the way it was for June 23rd, 2021. Get your birthday on the birthday calendar by going over to chuckchat.com/birthday. Put your birthday in there. We don't share it with anybody except our listeners and just tell you what day it is. If you want to be anonymous or you want some PII protection, because some of these people are putting in their kids, they're trying to tell us what year they were born. That's up to you.
They're generally using us as a reminder calendar.
Yeah. Get your wife an anniversary present. Yeah.
Pick up the groceries at 5 p.m. tomorrow.
We're going to keep reading that for the next 15 years.
That's right. Go get your groceries tomorrow at 5.
You know, there's better to-do programs than Technorama.
Yeah. You're relying on us. You got bigger problems.
Yeah. It's time to start Christmas shopping. You know, I always listen to my podcast a little late. So June is right about when I need you to give me a reminder for that. All right. We've got that reminder up there, chuckchat.com/birthday. Let's get on with the news, Random Key.
Good news, everyone!
Well, I don't know if I'd call this good news, but why don't you start out with the first story?
I think I've seen this before. Not necessarily this story, but I think I've seen this phenomenon before.
I've seen tent caterpillars do something like this.
Mm-hmm. So blankets of cobwebs are covering the Australian countryside in what has been dubbed the spider apocalypse. As the country battles a biblical mouse plague. Wow. Okay.
Peter Parker would take umbrage with that spider apocalypse.
I was going to say, I think this is in conjunction with a marketing campaign for the next Spider-Man movie. Just saying. Anyway, thick blankets of spider webs have been pictured stretched across the Gippsland region amid heavy rain and subsequent flooding in Victoria. The spooky veil covering shrubs, grass, and road signs show the spider's attempts to flee the floodwaters and seek refuge on higher ground. The pictures shared on Reddit are posted alongside the caption, "If the floods weren't enough, I give you spider apocalypse." The southeastern state has been ravaged by heavy rain and strong winds, forcing thousands to evacuate. Part of the region where were closed last week after rains left residents without power. Man, that sounds terrible. But despite the horror of social media users, Professor Dieter Hoochley, from the University of Sydney, determined the insects were sheetweb spiders and said the behavior was not unusual after floods.
That sounds like one of those tongue twisters. Sheetweb spiders, yeah. Sheetweb spiders.
I assume they're trying to get off the ground is when they're why they got so many webs. They built a web that is a little bit different from the ones we're more familiar with, like orbs. Their ones are flat, and spiders often live between two layers of webbing. When we get these types of heavy rains and flooding, these animals who spend their lives cryptically on the ground can't live there anymore and do exactly what we try to do and move to higher ground. Look at there. Might as well be a...
What's the relationship between the spiders and the mice, though?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. With another 50 millimeters of rain forecast for the East Gippsland this week, it is thought that the spiders could persist with their survival attack. And again, local reports suggest the phenomenon is known as ballooning, where cooler weather conditions have prompted spiders to cover stretches of land in cloud-like webs to try and shelter themselves from the wet conditions. The latest pest problems comes as the country battles tens of millions of rampaging mice tormenting communities.
So it must be that the floods... I can understand the mice. The floods bring rain and kind of make things a little more fertile. Things start growing again. The mice move in and start eating whatever they want.
I don't see a reason why the mice are an issue, but just that they are at the same time.
Right.
It's terrible.
Weird. Yeah. It says some people have been reporting with so many mice, they're crawling across their pillows and faces while they sleep.
Oh, no, no, don't know. No, no.
Yeah. Nice. All right. I just want
to, you know what? I'd have to sleep in like on my bed. I'd have to put like one of those single man tents.
Right.
So I can close it up.
Well, oh, there you go. You use the spiders to make a mouse tent.
There we go.
We can make it. We can turn this into a good thing. I should have given you
it's
this.
It's like one of those. It's like that little story where the mouse takes the splinter out of the elephant, and the elephant does something for right. You know, it goes around in a circle.
And then the mouse runs across your face in the middle of the night. Should have given you this next story just to see how you pronounce this fish name.
Yeah, no.
I can do it. I've known about this fish for a long time. A team of French researchers have found that the little understood coelacanth can live for a century. Not only that, but the fish's whole lifespan appears to be stretched as it spends years in the womb and doesn't fully mature until at least age 45. Talk about sticking around with your parents.
You know what? And my mom was complaining that I kept her in labor for 3 days.
Some previous estimates had the coelacanth pegged as a fast-growing, fast-spawning fish with a lifespan of about 20 years. But some observations of the fish in the wild had raised suspicions that they can actually live much longer than that. The new research published today in Current Biology estimates their lifespan at 100 years, based on an inspection of the animal's scales under polarized light. For all the fame above the ocean surface, the coelacanth's life history remains something of a black box. The fish was known from fossils and was presumed to have been extinct since the Cretaceous period, that's right before the big boom, 66 million years ago. But when a fisherman in South Africa pulled up a fresh specimen in 1938, it sent shockwaves through the scientific community. Its midnight blue and pearlescent white scales reminded Marjorie Courtney Latimer, the museum curator who first ID'd the captured specimen, of a starry sky. And it is in those scales that helped the recent team of researchers figure out the animal's actual longevity. It is a side project. In a side project, they undertook during the pandemic because everybody needs a hobby.
Yeah, got to do something.
Quote. Yeah, it's kind of got like they used to call them steel blue scales, but obviously they're not steel. But that's more like the color of them.
Right.
Quote, you can make great findings based on side projects, which are not funded and just for fun. Wow. I call it a software project, but you do your own thing, Marjorie. This is Bruno. He was the co-author. Bruno Hernandi, an evolutionary ecologist at the University of Montpellier in France. And then you just realize, wow, we got something which is really nice. That sounds like it's straight out of Hitchhikers too.
Right.
The scales of the coelacanth grow in rings for each year of the animal's life. The width of those rings, or circuli, signify the animal's rate of growth. Hampered by COVID-19's effect on travel, the team received coelacanth scales by snail mail from a number of scientific institutions across France and Germany and analyzed them under a microscope with polarized light, which allowed them to see the growth rings. Their findings revealed that I'm surprised nobody's done this before. I mean, this is such an interesting species that, wow, crazy. Anyway, their findings revealed that, quote, the maximum longevity of coelacanth was 5 times longer than previously thought, hence around a century, said Kaelig Mahe, the paper's lead author and researcher specializing in fish scale dating at IFREMER Channel and the North Sea Fisheries Research Unit in Boulogne-sur-Mer, France.
They didn't answer the big question.
What's that?
What does it taste like?
You don't want to eat these.
After 100 years, it's kind of gamey.
So it wasn't the fish's total lifespan that came as a surprise. The team also found that baby coelacanths stay in the womb for 5 years, far longer than the longest mammalian gestation. The Indian elephant is the record holder at about 22 months. Clearly, the coelacanth doesn't only take Sorry, I got distracted. I thought the live stream paused or something for a sec. Clearly, the coelacanth doesn't only take its time getting old. It paces itself for its whole life, from womb to watery tomb. Languid and large body, you could be fooled into thinking everything about the coelacanth is slow, because they swim really slow. They're just one of those deep water fish with the slow pectoral fins. Well, it can turn on a dime and has experienced plenty of genetic change over the millions of years since its presumed extinction, complicating the trope that the animal is a living fossil. Its extra fins, most obviously on the fish's ventral side, are a nod to its enigmatic evolutionary history. Its closest living relative on the tree of life is the lungfish, but genetic analysis has revealed its close links to tetrapods, four-limbed vertebrates that include several classes like mammals, reptiles, birds, and amphibians. The fact that the coelacanth could live up to, and perhaps beyond, 100 years puts it in the upper echelon of long-lived fish, especially those that aren't sharks. So, cool article here. I am fascinated by the coelacanth. First learned about it as a child, based on that story of discovery in 1938. And haven't heard too many stories about them, because I thought they were all studied really? Out, but apparently not. This is cool stuff.
It is pretty interesting.
Thanks for finding that story for me. That was a good Father's Day gift.
That should have been in the Remember When, 100 years.
Remember when coelacanths roamed the earth?
Right. All right. So our next story is about some interesting materials.
Is this for real?
The world's first wooden satellite set to launch. Say, can plywood survive in space?
Boy, when they say burn up in the atmosphere, this one's really going to take it literally.
Yeah. I know, right? There's no worry about this one coming back to Earth. So the world's first wooden satellite is on its way in the shape of the Finnish WESA WoodSat. So wait a minute.
Suddenly that image of wooden bender comes to mind.
Right. Actually, I was thinking more like, did they pick one of these up at IKEA or something to put it together? Anyway, so ESA materials experts are contributing a suite of experimental sensors to the mission, as well as helping with pre-flight testing. WESA WoodSat is a 10x10x10 CubeSat, a type of nano satellite built from standardized boxes, but with the surface panels made of plywood. WoodSat's only non-wooden external parts are corner aluminum rails used first deployment into space, plus a metal selfie stick so they can watch it.
Why didn't we think of this?
Yeah, no. Right. I don't know. I'm kind of embarrassed we didn't. Anyway, so the mission was initiated by Jari Mäkinen. Yeah, Jari Mäkinen.
That comes from living in the Michigan's Upper Peninsula with a lot of Finnish people around. You get to know how to pronounce your Finnish names.
Right.
He's a good friend with Jorma Lenkinen. And the peeping Tom Eino Lukkanen. Sorry, that one just was too easy.
All right. Moving right along. He co-founded a company called Arctic Astronautics, which markets fully functional replicas of orbit-ready CubeSats for education, training, and hobby purposes. I've always enjoyed making model planes involving a lot of wooden parts. Having worked in the space education field, this got me wondering, why don't we fly any wooden materials in space? So I had the idea, first of all, to fly a wooden satellite up to the stratosphere aboard a weather balloon. That happened in 2017. With a wooden version of KitSat. That having gone well, we decided to upgrade it and actually go into orbit. From there, the project just snowballed. We found commercial backing and secured a berth on an Electron launcher from Rocket Lab in New Zealand. So Ricardo Rampini, heading ESA's Materials Physics and Chemistry section, comments, "It's been a tight schedule, but we welcome the opportunity to contribute to WoodSat's payload in return for helping assess its suitability for flight." The first item we're embarking is a pressure sensor, which will allow us to identify the local pressure on board cavities in the hours and days after launch into orbit. This is an important factor for the turn on of high power systems and radio frequency antennas, because small amounts of molecules in the cavity can potentially cause them harm.
Fly me to the moon and let me play among... Anyway.
All right. Akira Kanai.
Yeah. The interesting stuff. I'm trying to think where this would lead. Why, with the price of lumber today, this is an expensive satellite.
it's now more expensive than putting some Starlink satellites up.
Don't bother putting gold foil on there or anything. I'm wondering if there's any radiation issues with that. And did they say how they're getting it up there? I mean, are they just going to chuck it out the next rocket launch from...
Yeah, they said they secured a launch on... I just read it. From Australia. Okay. New Zealand. I'm sorry, Rocket Lab in New Zealand.
Nice.
So they secured it. So, yeah. So... let's see, easy material. The good thing here is that we have ended up with devising a low-cost device that could find all kinds of further uses, both in orbit and down onto the ground. See, I imagine that if you had wood panels, that would cut down on having to have the antennas outside. I don't know, maybe, because would the signal go through wood much easier than it would metal, of course? You know, I don't know.
I got a 32 Chevy and they call it a Woody.
Base material 52. For plywood is birch, and we're using basically just the same as you'd find in a hardware store or to make furniture. See? IKEA.
I think IKEA's Finnish. Or Swedish, sorry. This right. place was Finnish.
Yeah.
All right, let's go on to the Hex and Strange Stories. I hit the button. Hit the button again. There we go. Mind reading technology. Can a $110 million helmet unlock the secrets of the mind? Oh, I should do that with a reverb next time.
Yeah.
Over the next few weeks, a company called Kernel, K-E-R-N-E-L, just like the Linux kernel, will begin sending dozens of customers across the United States a $50,000 helmet that can... crudely speaking, read their mind. Weighing a couple of...
By the way, you need a foot pedal for that reverb. You can just
I know. My next mixer. I'll make that a push button thing. Weighing a couple of pounds each, the helmets contain nests of sensors and other electronics that measure and analyze a brain's electrical impulse and blood flow at the speed of thought, providing a window into how the organ responds to the world. The basic technology has been around for years, but it's usually found in room-sized machines that can cost millions of dollars and require patients to sit still in a clinical setting. The promise of leagues more affordable technology than anyone can wear and walk around with is, well, mind-bending. Excited researchers anticipate using the helmets to gain insight into brain aging, mental disorders, concussions, strokes, and the mechanics behind previously metaphysical experience such as meditation and psychedelic trips. Wow, man, look at your helmet. To make progress on all the fronts that we need to as a society, we have to bring the brain online, says Brian Johnson, who spent more than 5 years and raised about $110 million, half of that was his own money to develop these crazy helmets. Woot! This guy's nuts. Johnson is the CEO of Kernel, a startup that's trying to build and sell thousands, if not millions, of lightweight, relatively inexpensive helmets that have the oomph and precision needed for what neuroscientists, computer scientists, and electrical engineers have been trying to do for years. Peer through the human skull outside of university or government labs. In what must be some kind of record of rejection, 228 investors passed on Johnson's sales pitch. And the CEO, who made a fortune from his previous companies in payments industry, almost zeroed out his bank account last year to keep Kernel running. "We were 2 weeks away from missing payroll," he says.
Mm.
Although Kernel's tech still has much to prove, successful demonstrations conducted shortly before COVID-19 spilled across the globe, convincing some of Johnson's doubters that he has a shot at fulfilling his ambitions. All right. That's,
you know what?
That, yeah, I'm thinking of Doc Brown and his helmet now.
Well, exactly. This will revolutionize social media. We can post a TikTok without just thinking about it.
I'm thinking of dancing. I'm thinking we need a new algorithm for TikTok.
Now, here come the Kardashians.
If this can give us insights into some of those mental things, maybe there's hope for understanding Parkinson's or Alzheimer's, and just having more knowledge about the brain.
You know,
still the biggest unknown frontier we have.
I want to see a demo of it because my thought is, and I'm sure somebody else would have thought about this as well. You remember we've talked about on the show in the past,
yes,
stories about people that were, they thought were in a coma and they were unresponsive, but yet their mind is active.
So they put this helmet on there and they got a visual on a television set and they saw Pong. And Pong was just stuck between the corners.
Oh, this thing's broken. Get another one in here. No, it's real.
No, that's what's going on in your brain when you're in a coma.
No, but this would help those people that were incapacitated, but their mind was still active. You know,
yes.
I think it could. It'd be easier to type on than, type with than...
Well, I don't think this
Dr.
is...
Dr. Hawking
this,
was using.
This is not an output device for, like, cognitive... It's measuring the brain blood flow and whatnot to give you insights as to how the brain is working. Not we've got the monkey that can do the, you know, move the cursor thing. That's already done. So this is a different instrument for a different purpose. Yeah, it goes on your head, but it's not.
We have a monkey that can move a cursor. I want to see that.
We covered this story weeks ago.
Yeah,
try to keep up.
I want to see that monkey butler. He'll give me a beer out of the fridge, bring me back.
Trunk monkey. All right. We have another thing in the Hacks and Strange Stories. The good timing, because this is a Star Wars story for you. So go ahead.
All right. So let me embiggen the font here so I can read it. So iconic Star Wars X-Wing fighter finds a new home at the Smithsonian Museum. So the Force will be with the Smithsonian in 2022. As the esteemed museum in Washington, D.C. rolls out its latest prize artifact next year in the form of an actual Star Wars X-Wing fighter. The iconic mosquito-like spaceship, I don't think I've ever heard it referred to as that, but okay.
I would say more like a dragonfly. It's got four wings.
Right. That's kind of what I was thinking. Mosquito-like spaceship prop has been generously loaned to the Smithsonian from Lucasfilm for an indefinite period. Despite taking a place a long, long time ago, far away, Star Wars introduced generations of fans here on Earth to outer space as a setting for adventure and exploration, says Margaret Whittecamp, space history chair at the museum in a statement, all air museum milestones begin with inspiration and science fiction so often proves that spark. The iconic X-Wing displayed amid our spacecraft celebrates the journey from imagination to achievement. And it's currently getting a proper shakedown, full conservation efforts at the Restoration Hangar in Virginia, besides the complement of World War II warbirds and assorted historic planes and spacecraft. Then sometime late next year, the sleek T-70 X-Wing will go on display at our entrance at the Albert Einstein Planetarium at the Smithsonian's National and Aerospace Museum on the National Mall. We are thrilled to have an X-Wing on exhibit. It is a real screen-used vehicle from the 2019 Rise of Skywalker. This display speaks to that crossover connection between people who are excited about spaceflight and have been inspired by the visions of Star Wars has been putting out since 1977.
I wonder if they're going to have the Winnebago from Spaceballs next. Go to the Air and Space Museum. There's a big Winnebago hanging from the ceiling.
Why not? Well, that's pretty cool.
May the Schwartz be with you.
Well, you know, they actually got the Enterprise there. I was there. I saw pictures of it.
Yes, but that at least looks like it could, it has been seen flying through space. Winnebago would really throw people, wouldn't it?
They would just park it out in the parking lot. No, we're not taking that in. But no, I think cool. It's really cool because they did have some, I'm trying to remember what the other one, they had another ship.
I was going to say, is that their first ship from the Star Wars universe?
Oh, from Star Wars?
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Oh, I'm surprised they didn't have the Millennium Falcon there.
Oof. Oh my gosh. They should. Well, that'd be kind of big.
If they have a working model that's still available.
Oh, I'm sure they do. They build that thing every time they turn around. But yeah, I think it's cool that they put ships in there that inspired people like the Enterprise. They should have stuff like this.
Right.
Amid all the historical artifacts, because you can kind of see where things, were inspired from it.
All right. Do we have any music for the, I don't even think we have music for the chat room, but anyway.
Oh, Remember When?
No, that's for the Remember When segment.
Oh.
Which we have. We just want to give a quick shout out to the chat. We've got a couple of people on YouTube, but I haven't seen any comments from them. Just look it up at the screen. John Miller Jr. and Amy Bowen seem to be our primary people that have been making comments in Facebook. But if you are around on Sunday nights and you'd like to join us live, 9:30 Eastern time.
Well, some fella named Chuck Tomasi commented. But...
Yeah, I'm trying to be interactive with the audience.
Right.
And that's how I get an excuse when I don't hear what you're saying. I go, oh, I'm sorry. I was busy entertaining the crowd.
I know. I make all these great jokes.
That's up for debate.
Right. Well, how would you know? You weren't listening.
Yes, I was. I'm multitasking. Okay. Mm-hmm. If you want to get in touch with us, you can do so. We haven't heard anybody on the voice line or the email line for a while. Times have slowed down, and our voicemail line is getting lonely. John Miller Jr. called us a few weeks ago. 707-530-2428 is the number we'd like to hear from you. Technorama@chuckchat.com is the email address that goes to both of us, so you can reach us both. We're not that famous that we're unapproachable. Okay, we honestly do have day jobs, and this is what we do for fun. So, and you too can be a podcaster too. If you want, we got a book for that. Podcasting for Dummies. See that? That's how it goes. All right. That takes us through the shout out to the chat room. Again, Sunday nights, 9:30 Eastern time. We'd love to see you here. Set yourself an alarm. Turn on those notifications on YouTube. Do whatever it takes to get out here and join the crowd. Maybe we'll go back and do a live show. So, speaking of live shows, we are preparing for a live show at Dragon Con.
That's true. Yep.
Again, with Clinton Alvord. So Comedy Forecast, Technorama and Friends, or Technorama, I forget who's on the billing, what it looks like, but the three of us get together, and it's always fun to try and mash up a very scripted show with a non-scripted show. And we have some wonderful new ideas in the pipeline, and we bring back some old favorites, too. So join us, will you? We're going to have more planning sessions as the weeks roll on, and we hope to see you there. At Dragon Con in Atlanta, Georgia, Labor Day weekend. That's the first Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday in Atlanta, Georgia in September.
So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, kind of forgot what month it was. All right, now we can play the Remember When music.
Yes.
So, the Hubble Space Telescope is sidelined by issues with its 1980s computer. Uh-oh, they have to get a patch for DOS. CPM is no longer a supported operating CPM. System.
Hey, quick, send a Z80 up there.
Quote, there is no definitive timeline yet as to when this will be completed, tested, and brought back to its operational status, the Hubble operations team said. NASA is working quickly to fix the Hubble Space Telescope after an issue with a 1980s era computer on board caused the famous orbiting observatory to temporarily shut down. Uh-oh, maybe it's ransomware from the Russians.
Uh-oh.
The Hubble Space Telescope, which in 2020 marked its 30th year in orbit, I think that's long beyond its original life plan, but anyway, it came to a halt on Sunday, June 13th, 1 week before we recorded this. just before 4 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, or 2000 GMT, after problems arose with one of the telescope's computers. Of course, that was built back in the 1980s. Probably had surface through-hole and only maybe double-layer technology. The Hubble operations team suspects that the trouble could be due to a degrading memory module. Well, I lived through the 80s and I'm having degrading memory modules.
It sounds like it's happening as we listen to you.
Right. What was I saying? The team is hard at work trying to correct the issue, switching to one of the telescope's several backup modules. Quote, assuming that this problem is corrected via one of the many options available, we have punch cards being sent up there as we speak. There's also the 300 baud modem. I'm making that up. It's expected to continue yielding amazing discoveries.
And the phone line that goes down.
into the late 20s. Yeah. Mom, I'm on a call with the Hubble. Hang up. Yeah. It should be able to keep working into the late 2020s or beyond. Okay. However, there is no definitive timeline yet as to when this will be completed, tested, and brought back to operational status, as I said at the top. On Sunday, the telescope's main computer stopped receiving signals from the payload computer and sent an error message to the ground system back on Earth. It just said, ? Because that's as good as error messages got back in the 80s.
PC load letter? What?
You gotta
what
go
does
through,
this mean?
You got to go through with a paper tray. Shake the toner cartridge. Keep the Hubble
working.
There's
no jam. It says it's a jam, but there's no jam.
Analysis indicates the error is likely due to a degraded memory problem. Memory can degrade over time due to the years of exposure to radiation in space. Issues like this are expected. Oh, darn. Which is why there are backup memory modules on the spacecraft. Hooray! How come they're not degrading?
I don't know.
The computer that stopped working on Sunday is a payload computer that controls the observatory's science instruments as part of the telescope's science instrument control and data handling module, or if you prefer, the SIC and DH module. Whatever. The module was last replaced during the last astronaut servicing mission in the observatory in 2009. Well, get somebody up there right away.
Yeah.
The payload computer is NASA's Standard Spacecraft Computer -1, the NSSC-1. That's clever. System that was built in the 1980s. Let's see. The payload computer is from the 1980s, which is when Hubble was designed and built. Like all spacecraft hardware, the harsh environment of space can take its toll on electronics. That is why there are backup memory modules and a backup payload computer on board the spacecraft that we can switch to if needed. The operations team members wrote in an email, but I'm sure one of them sounded something similar to that.
Yeah, right.
After it shut down on Sunday, however, that main computer then automatically put all of its instruments into safe mode. That's where
somebody
you have to like control F1.
Some hit F4 on boot.
Right. Safe mode initiated.
That's right.
And then they loaded GIMP. No, they had the grunt bootleg. That was grunt was way in the future for that. Anyway.
Yeah.
Would you like to boot into DOS? No.
Just press F1 to continue. Nobody's there to press it.
And there's no keyboard on the top.
Yeah. Or the astronauts go all the way there and forget to take the keyboard.
Does anybody have a keyboard adapter? That big DIN 5 thing. So, okay.
You know, it's funny. If you look at the picture that they have with this article.
I'm kind of sad.
Hey, see the solar panels?
Yes.
Look behind. It looks like there's just some wire and some tape. Doesn't it? Looks like some wire is just taped to the back of the solar panels. It's like you're really high tech there, buddy.
Well, could be. That's all you needed back then.
Yeah, in the 1980s, that's all the technology ran.
I'm kind of sad that it's starting to lose its memory and kind of getting faltery.
Yeah, but quite honestly, they've gotten some mileage out of this thing.
Yes, they have. Which is great. I'm not sure what the life expectancy of this was supposed to be, but I don't think it was 30 years.
No, I don't think it was either.
I thought, was James Webb supposed to be taking its place eventually?
Yeah, and it was delayed a little bit.
Again?
Yeah.
They've been talking about James Webb for the last 25 of that 30. So
yeah. So they'll have computers that are, you know, from the 1990s that now.
Yeah, we better start working on the James Webb replacement soon. All right, let's give a quick shout out to our patrons because they are the rock stars, the heroes that make this show go. For as little as a dollar a show, I'm going to bring the Patreon thing up there, give her the birthday contact us thing. Thank you very much, Alexis Duran, Amber Elstad, Amy Bowen. You people are amazing. Avner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Brian Brown, to round out some B's. Chris MC, Dandy Man Coyer, Dean Jensen, Denise Inglis, and Gary Lindros, Harold McKinstry, thank you very much, John Clifford, John Noble, Jorga Schrawin, Christina and Kyle, Leon and Mark, thank you, Mike, Chris, Saturday, Steven, Steve, and Steve. I'm not making this up. That's right. Really how it's listed there. So all you people are amazing. They not only get their names blasted out there on the internet every week with our utmost appreciation and affection, but they also get a special episode that's only available to our patrons as a thank you. Craig and I spill our thoughts, and sometimes more than cottage cheese comes out. Hey, that's what you get on that Patreon show.
Sounds appealing.
If you like cottage cheese, sign up.
Yeah.
But you can do that over at patreon.com/technoramapodcast. See, if you're watching the video, the URL is right there. Right there. Nope, sorry. You're I didn't there? Mean to elbow your screen, Craig.
I know, right? Ow.
That was very rude of me. All right, let's stop the music and... Whoops, not that one. Stop it! Abort! 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 There we go.
Oh, so, by the way, the... Hubble telescope was only supposed to be around for 10 years.
I think we got that our money's worth. What was not Perseverance, not Curiosity. What were the rovers that went up that lasted forever?
Oh God. Yeah.
Spirit and Opportunity.
Spirit and Opportunity. And they weren't supposed to last anywhere near where they did. Cause they were supposed to last life spans about 90 days or maybe a few months, but that was it. Now, but then, they ended up going for years.
Oh my gosh! I just looked at the runtime clock.
Marvel Comics announces
don't autoplay videos
Strange.
On me.
It's not a.
What are you looking at?
I brought up the next article.
Oh,
about
Captain America.
It's
really more of a video.
It autoplayed, but the volume indicator was at the bottom. Yet it was playing audio, so I had to click the volume thing to get it to the bottom. Anyway,
man, web pages. I swear. Aggravating.
Right. Comicbook.com. You're off our list, except for the wonderful spelling mistakes that you make. So close us out with one more from the Geek Library, which I kind of accidentally played here earlier anyway. So Geek Library it is. One creative Captain America decided, but they mashed America and decided together. This is what we
Captain
expect
America
from comicbook.com. Read on, yeah. Craig.
All right. So, you know, we appreciate cosplay as much as anybody else. So one creative Captain America decided to make. I don't understand this, the way they wrote this, like you said, decided to make his own pair of wings like Sam Wilson on Falcon the Winter Soldier. The Disney Plus series that might have ended, but fans are still really excited about Anthony Mackie's hero picking up the mantle of the Shield. Greg Enriquez knows his way around a tool shed because he got a lot of whippings behind it when he was... No, I'm kidding. The young inventor dropped a wild look at the functioning wings on Instagram, and his followers were left stunned. They came in and out and on command, and they can detach detach the shield from its resting place on his back. Enriquez is planning to have a tutorial on his YouTube channel some point. So go ahead and watch the video. It's actually not a very long video, but you can see him demonstrate the wings and they kind of pop out. Now, not as fast as on the show, but it's really cool. He actually did a pretty good job with it.
Just don't open those babies up in an elevator.
My luck, I couldn't get him to close and I couldn't leave the elevator. But he said, yeah, it was not possible really to rig the wings to do like that. I'm not folding it out. So it's not like it's one. Did I skip something? I don't know.
A major tweet? I don't know.
Anyway, he did show a little bit of how he made it, but he'll have a tutorial a longer Neat. Tutorial. But what's cool is he said that he was showing off somebody had, maybe they did post the tutorial because I think I feel like I watched it, but one guy on YouTube had made a magnetic thing and had like big four huge magnets that would go stink and stick on his back. He could pull it off. He just used a little hook, you know, like a plastic, no plastic, but a little metal hook. So he just puts it back there and it just hangs on the hook, which was kind of smart. So,
all right. Yeah. It had to be some engineering going on behind this thing.
It is cool. Yep.
So go check out the video if you want to see some fandom done with the wings. You got all your cosplay stuff ready to go for Dragon Con?
As long as it's the same cosplay as I've been doing, yes.
As long as? What would change?
Well, we did Men in Black one time.
Several times.
Yeah, now I've got, which I think some of that stuff is still floating around in the bucket. But no, I got Fry ready to go.
All right. Bring an orange towel of your own so you don't make all the hotel towels orange this year.
You know, hey, wait, look, right here. I'm not kidding you. Look, there's the...
That's the one.
There's the little hand towel.
Bring her back.
Get clean off the orange off my hair. Now, it's a little mat for my microphone so I can slide it around.
Well done.
Yeah.
I just... rewashed the lab coat, Professor Farnsworth's lab coat.
When was the last time it was washed?
Right after Dragon Con when I came back. I always wash things right after
almost
I get
2
back.
Years ago.
Right. But I opened it up. I went, oh, there's still a bit of makeup on the collar. Let me see if I can clean that up. Plus, you know, it never hurts to freshen things up. They've been sitting in a box for 2 years.
That's true.
So we should be good to go. Go ahead.
The only thing I normally have to do is on the way down there, I'll stop at a Party City and pick up some orange hairspray because I end up using most of it while I'm down there.
You're going to have to grow your hair out a little bit so we can spike it again do the fry do.
I will. Actually, probably will skip a haircut during August.
We might have to get you a wig, again. Man. You're getting a little thin on top.
Hey, wait, what?
Get a fry wig. It's faster.
A fry wig. That sounds probably like, less messy. I would. The hotels would like me better.
Sounds like something you go fishing with. Hey, did you bring your fry wigs?
Yes, I did.
Okay, that brings us to the question of the week. End of the show, everybody. Good news, everyone. The show is over. Question of the week is, what is the worst season of a good show? I got to think on that one. Or the best season of a bad show?
I would say Star Trek TNG, probably the first two seasons. And I'm not saying they were horrible. They were just weren't the best of the show.
Need to get their feet under them.
Yeah. You know, once they got into the third season, it really started to pick up. So I'm not saying it's terrible TV. I'm just saying it's the worst seasons of that show.
Usually last seasons are the worst, and that's why they get canceled, because everybody's fallen off. You know, thinking about the latter seasons of Heroes, like that show came out rocking. And
yeah, they didn't have a plan. I don't think they had a long-term plan for that show.
New. Save the cheerleader, save the world. That was that expired quickly.
Yeah, I was like, okay, what are we going to do? Where are we going with this?
I have officially stopped watching Manifest on NBC. Don and I were watching that. Season one, intriguing. Again, like Heroes. Like, ooh, this is kind of interesting. Season three is really, every episode was getting laborious. And I went, oh, for crying out loud. Why am I wasting my time now? Yeah. So that one is, I've given that one the hook. And I don't do that too often on a TV show. So. These are just our personal opinions. Your taste may vary. Let's get these wonderful listeners on their way. So you can contact us again, 707-53. Where's my magic button for that? Contact us, 707-530-2428. That's our listener line, 707-530-CHAT. Or email us, technorama@chuckchat.com. We'd love to hear from you. We are doing this still Sunday nights, 9:30 Eastern, Facebook and YouTube. Love to see you there. Jump in the chat. Have some snarky comments to throw back at John Miller Jr. or not.
Yeah.
Because certainly no, we can't. Thank you very much for all the help in finding the stories and getting things on the back end technically sound and posted. Craig, you're an asset to the show.
As long as I post it correctly, I am an asset.
As long as I get to the right files correctly.
That's true.
Thank you, listener, for joining us. And until next time, Craig, give him a binary high five.
All right. 101. Good night.